Hello, and welcome to the Money and Banking Law Podcast with Joe Sylvia, brought to you by the global law firm of Duane Morris. I'm your host, Joe Sylvia. I'm a former Federal Reserve lawyer who represents banks, fintechs, and other clients on M&A, payments, and regulatory matters at Duane Morris. I'm also a core member of our banking, fintech, and digital assets and blockchain practices. The goal of the Money and Banking Law Podcast is to inform and educate our clients and friends on both fundamental concepts and structure of the banking ecosystem, as well as critical developments in the law and regulation of money and banking. On this episode, we're talking about financial services regulation in Europe with a good friend, Simon Walbrohl, who is a partner with the law firm of Schelist Law Firm in Germany. Welcome, Simon. So great to have you on and to discuss the structure of financial services regulation in the Eurozone. Simon, let me begin by asking you to provide a little background on yourself and your practice.
Yeah, of course, I'm happy to. Joe, many thanks, first of all, of course, for having me. I'm very much looking forward to it. I mean, we are in the same international law firm network, multi-law, right? So good friends for a while now. And so finally, we have a podcast together. So yeah, my name is Simon. I'm in our Frankfurt office of Schelist Law Techs, a mid-sized law firm with five offices throughout Germany. Obviously, we don't need an international presence given that we have our law firm network, multi-law. I'm in the banking finance practice group focusing on regulatory aspects and having a, so to say, industry focus on fintechs, embedded finance products, and let's say any market players that claim to be innovative and have lean products, user-centric centric products, so to say. So yeah, very nice to be here. Looking forward to our podcast now.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks, Simon. So let's jump in. So in Europe, can you outline basically the different roles of the European level supervisors and how they kind of interplay with the national supervisory authorities?
Yeah, of course. Trying to give an overview in a nutshell, because of course, when we're talking about Europe and the European Union and the regulatory framework attached to it, it's not always that easy. So say generally, each EU member state has their own regulatory authorities. Mostly it's the central banks within each member state. In Germany, for example, we have the Bundesbank, which is the federal central bank for Germany, and we have BaFin, which is a separate authority. And these two regulatory or supervisory authorities, they kind of share the supervisory tasks, so to say, with each other. And so, well, we have the national, as I said, we have the national supervisors, and then on a European Union level, actually there is two streams of authorities. One is the say the law giving or the regulation providing authorities, which is first and foremost the European Commission and the European Central Bank. And the European Banking Authority on the one hand, and we have also a supervisory authority, which is the European Central Bank as well, say very generically speaking, being competent for the very large scale banks and the say banks of systemic relevance. Why am I saying that? Large scale is defined by a certain threshold of what they have in their auditing books, and the systemic relevance. If you take, for example, Luxembourg, Liechtenstein, Malta, comparatively so to say smaller jurisdictions in terms of overall economic size, but the banking industry has a comparably large stake in this national market size, so they are supervised by the EU authorities directly.
Interesting. Okay, so it sounds almost as complicated as what we have here in the United States in terms of a federal and state level supervisory authorities with different different aspects of authority over different kinds of institutions, different size institutions. So how does the dual structure of that supervision, how does that dual structure of European institutions and national regulation influence or impact the day-to-day compliance for financial institutions, for example, operating in Germany? I mean, I can imagine it makes it just more and more complex, as it does in the United States when you have supervisory authorities at the state and federal level. But I'm wondering how that, if it looks similar in Germany for financial institutions, or how it may differ, I guess.
So of course it is kind of complicated if you go down the rabbit hole of the details. But I mean, the general idea is to define any regulatory requirements that are applicable to any institutions or to all of the institutions within the European Union and have them regulated on a EU level, right? So you can say directly applicable rules, or rules that are being directly applicable to all of the institutions that shall be governed by the European Union. And apart from that's the easy part, right? Where it gets a bit more complicated is when on an EU level, there are some rules and regulations defined that are not directly applicable, but say are subject to national particularities, for example. I mean, just compare Germany with 82, 83 million people living here, and then you have a country as small as Liechtenstein, for example. Of course, there are huge differences in the regulatory landscape, and the, let's say, the prerequisites in the jurisdictions are vastly different. So you need to somehow weigh this in, and the regulator tries to do so in giving a certain amount of discretion to the national regulators so that they can fill out the details, right? The national regulators on the one hand, and the national law-giving institutions, which is for us the Deutsche Bundestag, so the German Congress, so to say. And on that level, I mean, the idea is to have a unified European Union market, but of course there are many jurisdictions, and obviously Germany is not one of the easy ones, saying, well, for us it's different, so our market is different, the conditions are different, so we need to consider some particularities, which then of course leads to practical, I don't want to say issues, but practical challenges, to keep it that way, and to be neutral. I don't know whether we can dig into that later on, but there's this institution of the European passport, just very briefly, and then maybe we can follow up on that in a minute. The idea is once you perform a regulated activity, and once you obtain a license for that in one of the EU member states, then in theory, you shall then be able to passport this license to any other EU jurisdiction and can act on a cross-border basis. That's the theory.
No, it's funny. I mean, the more that I'm hearing you talk about the structure there, it just continues to remind me of the similarities we have here in the United States between, the federal government and the U.S. Congress creating laws, and then the federal banking and financial services agencies, writing the regulations to implement the laws, to provide some of the details on how to comply with the laws. And then you also have state level supervisors and state level legislatures doing kind of the same thing for each one of the states. And then, it's funny, Germany, you said 82, 83 million people. It's a bigger market. It has different expectations. I'm thinking of, markets in the US, places like New York State, California, to some degree, places like Chicago and Philadelphia, Boston, other markets where you see state laws that have gone, I'll say, above and beyond in terms of expectations for financial institutions, because again, they view that market or their state as needing some either enhancements or particularities that make it quite interesting if you're going to be operating in those states. And then just like passporting, I mean, I want to, let's get into that because that's really interesting. So the possibility for EU licensed institutions to get into other EU markets, you know, how do they spread their activities across these member states? What does this passporting scheme really look like, and how does it play out?
To give you an example, if you are a, or let's see, is it a good example when you start with a German company? No. Let's go for an institution in Belgium or the Netherlands or anywhere, and you say you want to conduct your business also in Germany, or in any other EU member state. So if you decide on some target markets where you want to enter the market, then and you are licensed in your home jurisdiction, right? You have the respective license for whatever, whether it be financial portfolio management, whether it will be lending business, whether it will be deposit taking business whatsoever, right? Or any of the payment services we have here, so payment initiation service, for example. You have your respective license, and the first thing you typically do as an institution is to check whether or not you ha the target jurisdiction provides for the same license. For example, in Germany, the factoring business is subject to a license requirement, and factoring business, in a nutshell, is the ongoing purchase of receivables based on framework agreements. I mean, that's obviously one of the financing instruments we have for the SME market. So for any merchants, for example, they're selling their whatever purchase price receivables, right, to a refinancing partner, and this refinancing partner may conduct factoring business, which is licensed in Germany, but it's not in, I mean, certainly not in the Netherlands. I think also not in Ireland, in some jurisdictions. So for an Irish company conducting this kind of business, wanting to enter the German market, they don't have such a license in Ireland. So there is nothing to passport, right? So from Ireland, they cannot export their license to Germany because they don't have a license. And if they enter the German market saying, well, we don't have anything to passport because it's not licensed in our home jurisdiction, then in Germany, they would conduct business without having the required license. But maybe, actually, maybe I was a bit too quick here. Maybe one step back. In an ideal world, passporting means you are licensed in one jurisdiction, and then you go to your home regulator and filing for business activities in these three other jurisdictions. And then your home regulator, on a national level, your home regulator then approaches their sister regulators, so to say, in the other jurisdictions, approaching them and saying them, well, this company, the I don't know, the Joe's Payment Services, for example, they belong to us. So they are regulated in Germany. They belong to us. So if they do any trouble with you in Spain, then just let us know, please. So the home regulator still remains the responsible supervisory authority, right? But the, can I say, guest regulator then, right? The regulator in Spain, for example, they kind of supervise you. They have certain rights to assess some information and some reporting. But as soon as Joe's Payment Services, sorry for using you as an example now, but if Joe's Payment Services is in trouble in Spain, then the Spanish regulator would go to the German BaFin in that case, to the Federal Financial Supervisory Authority, and saying, well, these are your guys. Please take care of that. Can you talk to them? That's the ideal case. And that's comparatively easy because a license application procedure, curious to hear what you have to say about the US structure, but to apply for a license, it takes time. It's, I think, at least 1 year, rather 1.5 or 2 years to obtain a license in your home jurisdiction. But once you have the license in place, you can, in theory, and in an ideal world, you can exported to other jurisdictions, as I just said. It gets complicated if the target jurisdiction, as I said, if the target jurisdiction, or say, if you're conducting any services that are not subject to a license in your home jurisdiction, but will be in your target jurisdiction. As I said, with the factoring example, for example, you come from Ireland, let's say Ireland or the Netherlands, come into Germany. The German regulator would say you conduct factoring business, and the Dutch entity would say, or the Dutch institution would say, well, what does that mean? I heard of that, but what is that? What does that mean? We don't have a license for that. We cannot passport any license. Then the German regulator would say, well, then you need to apply for this license in Germany. And then you have, from that moment on, you don't have any EU passporting, what can I say, ideal world, right? Then it would be several jurisdictions, several license requirements. Everything would be divided by the national borders again, right? So like the pre-EU terms.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I mean, that is in my mind very similar to what we have in the United States, because for non-federally chartered institutions, which is most financial services companies, because at the federal level, there's only a limited number of institutions that will get a federal or a national level charter. And, you know, most of the consumer lending type businesses or, you know, specific finance companies that are lending, originating, servicing, or otherwise in different states, they're looking at state licensing. And if there are states that you're operating in which you don't need a license to do whatever activity it is that you're doing, but you're going to be going into another state and that state requires a license for that activity, you will need to apply for that license. And it is the case that it does take time, whether it's at the state or federal level. Again, it depends, as I'm sure it does in Europe, it depends on the kind of license that you're seeking, but the timing can be quite protracted in the United States. There are certain states that take a long time, partially because they have a lot of license applications to review. There are some states that are faster. At the national level, the federal banking agencies, the federal markets agencies, they can be quick and they've been quicker, but sometimes it can depend on the administration in charge. There's all these different factors that we have in the States that it sounds like you also have in Europe with respect to the licensing regime. And because, you know, so much of our financial services go through state level licenses, it makes it challenging, to say the least, for an entity that's looking to engage in business across, you know, the 50, 51 jurisdictions of the United States to ensure that they have all the requisite licenses and then going to apply for them, waiting for the timing to, you know, get through the process and all those kinds of things. So it's does seem relatively similar, but it's also kind of fascinating to hear what the process is like, and as opposed to what you were talking about with respect to the home state regulator and the, you know, the guest state regulator. You know, in the United States, it would be the case that, you know, if you have a license to conduct a business in New York, for example, and you wanted to expand that business into Pennsylvania, right next door, you would still have to go get a license or a registration, depending on the activity, from the Pennsylvania agency. And then that would basically give the Pennsylvania agency direct authority over you. So the Pennsylvania
I
agency
see.
might talk to the New York agency about the activities, but they wouldn't necessarily go to New York and say, hey, you know, this guy's causing trouble in Pennsylvania. You need to take care of it, because Pennsylvania will say, no, we have direct jurisdiction over them, so we're just going to take care of it ourselves. And so it's a little bit different from that perspective, but I also appreciate that we're talking about states versus actual countries. And so
Yeah,
there's different perspectives.
I think that's where the difference really what can I say, where you can see the difference, where you can actually spot the difference, as you said, because the idea of the European, I mean, of course, we have a European Union. We don't have a United States of Europe, which would be, I think, the equivalent to the United States of America. So the European Union idea was and still is, obviously, to have sovereign, obviously sovereign states, sovereign jurisdictions. But combined on a regulatory basis to maybe vis-a-vis third countries, for example, vis-a-vis the US, to act as one market, right? I think the idea is to be we have one market, which when we now talk about, for example, the any tr transatlantic business, the idea is for US American fintechs, for example, that they know once they enter the European market, there is no huge difference, and please put huge in brackets, there shall be no difference where you enter the market. So whether you go to Germany, France, Italy, Lithuania, or Slovakia, because the regulatory environment shall be the same, right? It's not quite the same, but it shall be the same. And maybe one or two insights I can share from what we see and from our clients and what we see from our practice, is because we have many clients intending to enter the European market and then just ask themselves, where shall we enter, right? And the German regulator is known to be rather strict. I don't want to say complicated, that's not the case, but rather strict, rather a very what can I say? They're very is it obedient maybe to the law, which is a good thing, because
Sure.
you can sell this, because you may know the of course you may know the song, once you make it here, you can make it everywhere. If I may quote, actually that applies to regulatory applications, because many fintechs say, well, Germany might take a bit longer. Not that much longer, actually, but it takes a bit longer to apply for a license. But once we have it from Germany, then the passporting out into other EU jurisdictions is kind of easy. So don't take me for granted, don't take me by word now, but if you have a payment service license granted by the German regulator, you won't have, I don't want to say you won't have any problems, but very limited problems. To passport them and export them, this license to any other country. In theory, it would be the same applies for if you passport from Lithuania into Germany, for example, or from France into Germany. In theory, it shall all be the same, but it's not. It's a bit easier to start in Germany, have kind of, you know, this old made in Germany seal. Maybe you can compare it. It's a bit comparable to say, well, it's kind of a quality sign to say we have the application in Germany. But just one last aspect on that, it changes. It changes because for quite a long time there was, maybe discrimination is a bit too hard to say, but there was some kind of reluctancy of customers, first and foremost, when they see a Lithuanian-based entity conducting business in Germany. Why am I saying Lithuania all the time? Because that was and still is the go-to market in terms of innovation, and in terms of licensing procedures. Nowadays, you see that this kind of not discrimination, but say prejudice, for example, is on the say is on the declining phase. That's not the case anymore, because customers now understood that. Take Revolut, for example. Revolut, they started with a, which is, I think you know Revolut, because they're quite active also in the US. They started in Lithuania. So their first license, if I'm not mistaken, has been granted by the Lithuanian authority, and then they exported it. And I mean, if you ask anyone in Germany, is Revolut a, what can I say, a reliable banking partner? Everyone would say, yes, of course. Of course. So there's no prejudice on where you come from, on the home members state, which is a good thing. But yeah.
It that you know it it's It is interesting because we've talked to clients here in the United States that look at state level licensing, and in certain cases they will say, we understand that it may take a shorter time frame and maybe the regulator isn't quite as strict or will have quite as heavy scrutiny on the application in, XYZ state, right? Say a smaller market, for example, like a West Virginia or a South or North Dakota. One of these markets is just not as big. And I have nothing against these states, they're great states, but just the market isn't quite as big as someplace like New York or California. So the client may say to us, we understand, just like in the German context, we understand that it's harder and takes longer to get the license in New York. But once we get the license in New York, does that make it, in essence, easier to go to other states with license applications because it's kind of this stamp of approval from what's viewed as a more heavy touch regulatory agency? And I think that can be the case, but it is also the case that states really do like to, in the US, they really do like to review wholesale each application. And yes, it might look nice and be supportive that you've already gotten a license from a state with a bigger market, but the states are still also protecting their individual investors and customers first and foremost. And so they'll still provide enough scrutiny for every application. It's just a question of whether or not there's a real benefit to starting with the harder state, right? And I don't know that there really is, but there's certainly a perspective from some clients that are not as familiar with the regulatory regimes that there is.
And I think, I mean, I think that's the point, right? It's mostly hearsay, isn't it? So it's mostly like, well, they say that the regulator in XYZ tends to be a bit easier to discuss with rather than the regulator in, I don't know, ABC. It's mostly hearsay, isn't it? And I mean, we in the European Union, it was really an issue. I think it was called a regulatory arbitrage. So to choose the jurisdiction where it tends to be the easiest to get an application. And I'm fully in support of the EU regulator. They of course, what can I say, applied measures that this regulatory arbitrage is not possible anymore, meaning that the national regulators are obligated by the same level of standards, right? So that this arbitrage is not possible anymore. So that you could say, well, in the Netherlands, you need to hand in your, it's just an example. I don't know whether it's true or not, but I don't want to discriminate any EU member country, but say in the Netherlands, it's you need to hand in a very detailed documentation on the shareholders of the institutions, and in Spain you don't need to. So let's go to Spain. That's not the case, of course. That's not the case. But maybe, Joe, if I may ask you a question,
Yeah,
I
please,
hope
please,
that's okay, because I am I don't know. I should have mentioned it in the first place. Now I'm I just obtained an MBA from Boston University, so I'm very very proud and fresh member of the MBA alumni group of the Boston University. And of course I met many interesting people there, classmates, discussing with them. And for example, if one of them come to me, and of course I will refer it to our US law firm partners, then thinking about you, Joe, then if they say, well, I have a fintech idea, like a business idea of any payment service, whatever, any regulated payment service, and so they would need to ask themselves, where do we want to offer the service, right? And then to identify the applicable regulatory framework and maybe also the application process where to start with. Obviously, when they're located in Boston, for example, then they go for the Massachusetts regulation, of course. But how about, I mean, in today's time, you have like online platforms and stuff. So You cannot easily say, I want to offer my services in the entire US. That's not the case, as far as I understand, right? You need to check each and every member state's underlying regulation, right?
Yes, that's absolutely right. I mean, when we have a client like that that comes to us, the first thing that I tend to ask is, well, what are the actual activities that you're looking to conduct? And whether it's going to be an online platform or, in-person physical locations or otherwise, for things outside of the securities, commodities, and pure banking in terms of deposit-taking banks. Outside of that framework, you're really looking at state licensing,
I see.
and the specific activities is where the rubber meets the road with respect to the state statutes and regulations. And so if this individual is saying, okay, well, I want to start a fintech and I'm going to be located in Boston, and I only want to deal with providing, what's called money transmission services here in the United States. It's kind of one of the focus areas for fintechs. I want to focus on money transmission, providing it only to individuals that reside in Massachusetts. Okay, then let's start with the Massachusetts license, and really that's all you would typically need. But if you start touching consumers in other states, that's when the other state statutes are going to be implicated, and you're going to be required to be looking at licensing or registration in those other states. So these online platforms, go
And
ahead.
that's not the and that, and then that's not the core regulatory frameworks. It's the consumer law frameworks, right? Because this is another pillar we have in Europe we haven't talked about yet, and please let's not do so. But yeah, understand. Okay, sounds very familiar. Sorry, didn't want to interrupt
No,
you.
it's very similar. And so, it becomes a very state by state type of analysis for online platforms that are looking to engage in any in business throughout the United States. And so, we also have certain states that have, what we consider still novel types of licenses or novel types of bank charters. You probably heard about Wyoming with basically a digital asset or cryptocurrency bank type charter. And there's a couple of other states that have similar charters, which is great. But then you have to examine whether or not that charter, that statutory authority provided with that charter or license, grants you certain authorities in other states, or is it just within that state? And then trying to export that activity, you still need to get a license in the other state. So it's very, very complicated. And it obviously makes it very interesting and productive for us as attorneys advising folks, but it's a very complicated analysis. But for the most part, as opposed to some of the what we call prudential regulation in the United States, the very specific activity focused regulation that we have is where a lot of the consumer and kind of specialized finance comes into play with licensing. And so it's similarly complicated. But I also wanted to say real quick, I forgot that you had recently gotten your MBA from Boston University. We'll have to have another conversation about that some other time. My brother-in-law also got his MBA from Boston University a number of years back now. And then I just finished my first semester teaching remotely for the Boston University Law School with
Oh,
a
great.
good friend of mine, John Buckman. We taught fintech law or fintech regulation at Boston University. So great university, and a big shout out to their LLM program and financial service and banking and financial services. There, it's a great program. So awesome connections there. It's amazing to hear some of the similarities in terms of perspective and regulatory authorities. Obviously, there's some differences, but I guess with respect to maybe turning to like specific fintech or financial innovation issues, when you're advising fintechs or clients with innovative business models, what are your biggest pain points in the EU regulatory landscape for those types of clients?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that the biggest pain point is not the license procedure or any regulatory requirements to start your business, because this is This is part of your business plan. I mean, this is kind of what do you say? What you signed up for, right? So you if you want to be offering these and that services, then you are aware of the regulatory challenges attached to that generally. So the key that I would say the most pressing challenges are still any compliance provisions you need to fulfill, AML, so all the anti-money laundering aspects, KYC aspects, sanctions. I mean, sanctions for the European Union is a very complex topic
Oh, yeah.
to yeah. I mean, it's. I mean, for the longest time, I put it very simple now. So please, again, don't take me for granted here. But for the longest time, it was kind of easy to identify who's your friend, who's your enemy.
Yeah.
So there was friend, enemy, left, right. I don't even want to say east, west, but you know what I mean for the last couple of decades. And we're not living in this world anymore. And what you can see in the at least from our perspective in the European Union, is within our union, all good, right? We're adhering to the same AML laws, but the EU has their trade partners and their business partners all over the world, and in any of these, what can I say, shades of gray, right? It's not like black, white, on, off, 0, 1. It's not binary anymore. So, and we have business partners all over the world, and in any kind of these shades. And that's where things get complicated, because if a business partner of your business partner is involved with jurisdictions that are sanctioned by the European Union or Germany. And while I'm saying that, you notice that I say sanctioned by the European Union or Germany, and there's also I think there's the United Nations. No, it's not. But I think there is another supra national authority also giving sanctions lists. So you need to apply or adhere to several lists that are still in the up, not still, but they're constantly being updated. So that's where things get very much complicated. And just to give you a very simple example, for like up until 5 years ago, so to say, I don't want to link this to any event, but there have been some, right? In the last couple of years, up until 5 years ago, the defense industry, and it was not even called defense industry, it was mostly was called the weapon industry, in Germany was or not in Germany, but in the European Union, was an industry that was not on the, what can I say, on the short list, meaning banks were very reluctant in financing any defense deals, for example, because he said, well, anything with weapons might potentially be bad, so let's rather not do it. But if, as of today, you see that one of the most pressing challenges we have within the European Union and Germany in particular is our defense industry. Not the industry itself, but the ability to defend ourselves, right? To have some kind of power on our own. That's a challenge for us. So that means if you now say you want to finance any defense deal, every bank would say, of course we do, of course. And let's forget about the that the defense industry has been on the blacklist or on the red, what do you say, on the red list for the last have been blacklisted or for the last couple of years. Let's forget about that, because that's a good thing. Let's go for it. And if you then ask further and say, well, you need to dig a little deeper. Who's the seller? Okay, box ticked. It's a German company, right? Who's the buyer? Okay, box ticked. It's an Austrian company. I don't know. And what's the buyer doing with this weapon? Well, they export it to the Middle East. Nah, that's kind of okay. So like they export it to Dubai, for example. You say, well, okay, that's kind of okay. And then from Dubai, it moves on to, I don't know, and ends up in North Korea. So what do you do then? I mean,
Right.
so.
Yeah, it's a tough. I mean, we have similar analysis in the United States with the Office of Foreign Assets Control and the sanctions that we have because, and those are just ours, right? We still have entities that need to look at the European sanctions and the sanctions that come out from other supranational entities. So it's very similar, and it gets complicated, and it's a situation where, we have a lot of clients that will say, if I'm engaging in this whatever kind of international transaction, where does my exposure essentially stop with respect to things like economic sanctions? Because once I sell my wares or finance this particular transaction, I can see one or two steps down the line, but I don't know what that second or third level entity is doing with these with the goods, right? Are they sending them to one of these countries that we don't want to be doing business with? And it's tough to say, okay, well, there's not a ton of really clear guidance as to where your exposure may stop, but a lot of it revolves around your knowledge. And if you have knowledge that things are ultimately getting to North Korea, then that's going to be a problem.
And everything we raise right now, this very topic, I mean, that really touches the free market idea, right? So that touches actually that touches and sometimes contradicts the economic principles we are, and we meaning the European Union as well as the United States, we base our economies on, right? So we are really challenging the our basic assumptions on how we live in an economic sense. And that's, yeah, may really get complicated. I might have one example for you, but I interrupted you again. So sorry
No,
for
no, no.
that.
No, that's great. Yeah, no, you're right. There is, I think, a natural tension that we see between, wanting to have open markets to encourage innovation, encourage cross-border activity and the promotion of growth throughout the world. But there's a tension between that and national security interests or the economic sanctions interests. And so that is really fascinating to think about. But I don't, that's not gonna change anytime soon. But
No.
it is an interesting concept.
Yeah, but if we could, we would be the first ones, I'm sure.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
But maybe I have an example that perfectly chimes in on where we began our conversation, on the harmonization or not harmonization of the European Union market, and maybe it's similar to the US as well. If we go for AML laws, for example, as I said, that's one of the most challenging pain points for fintechs. I mean, if you conduct business, cross-border business, you of course have business partners that are located abroad, right? In other jurisdictions. And I mean, under not only German AML laws, but it's applicable to each of the EU member state. You are as a regulated institution, if we're talking about the financial market we are talking about anyway, you are obligated to identify the ultimate beneficial owners. So you need to identify who's really owning the business partner, right? So that's what we say KYC, like know your customer. Knowing means who is it actually? Who's behind the company or the group of companies, right? And to do so, there is a register you can access when you are an obligated party under AML laws. Okay, so far so good. The idea was to have these national registers connected so that you can have the information accessible in each and every EU member state and across states. That's the important aspect. This has not yet been put into place, so that means you have national registers. Okay, so I know, or say there's a Spanish company entering the German market, right? They try to onboard a German customer. So what do they do? They go to the German register, ask for permission to ask for permission to look into the register to get their excerpt. And the register says, "Who are you? You are not obligated under German AML laws." The Spanish company says, "Well, but we are regulated. We are obligated under AML laws, so we need to conduct our AML checks." And the German register says, "Well, but you're not obligated in Germany." And they say, "Well, that's true." So they don't get access to the German register. So what shall they do? They go back to the Spanish register, and in the Spanish register, they type in, sorry for taking you as an example again, they type in Joe's Payment Services Deutschland GmbH, right? So that's a German entity. And of course, what's the response of the register? No results found, of course, because the register only contains Spanish companies. So is that it? So that means the Spanish company can tick the box and say, "Well, I have assessed my KYC and AML assessment properly," because that's the way it is. I mean, that shows how cross-border work is being slowed down by AML regulations, and this is something that needs to change very soon,
Yeah,
I
that
think.
seems very, very inefficient, especially in,
One of the pain points, yeah.
yeah, especially for something like it's as important as the AML laws. So that's really fascinating. Well,
Exactly.
this has been just an awesome conversation, Simon. I hope that you will agree to come back on from time to time so we can kind of compare notes between the EU and the US and what's going on with innovation and fintechs, especially. I really hope you'll come on in the future. So final question for you. Where can our audience find you if they have questions or they need your expertise? So is it LinkedIn, your email, phone, whatever you are willing to share?
Any of the above, all of the, not any of the above, all of the above. So of course on LinkedIn, on our website. Actually, Joe, I need to have some advertising space here. We also have a podcast for our firm.
Yes, yes.
We just invented this year for our 30th anniversary. So from time to time, I record an episode there that's called Schallast and Friends. So as the law firm is spelled. But of course, email me, just Google me. You can go to the law firm's website, find me on LinkedIn, and I'm very happy to hear any comments. And if I may say so, I would be very happy to come back because I guess, Joe, we can talk for hours, not only on
Yes.
that topic, but on many other topics as well. So I
Oh
was very
yeah.
happy that you had me here, and it was lots of fun.
Well, no, I really appreciate it. It was my pleasure. I look forward to future conversations where we can, dive in a little bit even deeper than we did today. So I really appreciate that, Simon. That's all for today, guys. If you have any questions from any of our episodes, please reach out to me at jsylvia@duanemorris.com, or you can reach out to any of your favorite Duane Morris lawyers. Finally, be sure to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I appreciate everyone listening in. Stay tuned for new episodes coming soon, brought to you by Duane Morris and the Money and Banking Law Podcast with Joe Sylvia. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.